This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, chapters 17 and 18, The Four Champions, and The Weighing of the Wands. In these chapters, everyone has branded Harry with the Scarlet A of attention whore.
Yes, they have.
And yes. I feel for him because, again, he totally doesn't. This is totally everyone else presuming that because he's a celebrity, he must naturally, and especially a child celebrity, he must naturally be a dick by default.
They think he's Gilderoy Lockhart. Like, I think they've just dubbed him a mini Gilderoy Lockhart in a way.
Yeah, so I have feelings about that, and I felt bad.
Some of the things that transpire, I mean, we've been there, and I admired Hermione's emotional intelligence in the upcoming chapter.
Yes, so, yeah, overall, two chapters, preliminary impressions.
I think it's really an interesting take that, you know, jealousy is an interesting thing to explore because we've all felt it. I mean, at least I know I have. And especially within the realm of friendship. And it's really ugly and it's hard to deal with. So I think it's really, I admire Harry for adding those chapters here. But I also sense his frustration where there are sometimes people are jealous of things that you're like, I cannot control this thing. Like it just happened to be, you know, I just happened to be lucky. Again, with this particular situation with him being entered into the Triwizard Tournament, might not really be something you would want to be jealous of. So,
indeed, because like I'm trying to think of a real world equivalent, like basically being magically forced into the Olympics. Like, and again, the Olympics doesn't even have necessarily the danger quality. It's just making a fool of yourself. So.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
forcing like you a- to like, I don't know, force you to like, basically forcing you into the Hunger Games.
Yeah. Forcing you to like catch javelins or something. I don't know. I was like,
At some point I do want to go into like a scholarly Slytherclaw episode about comparing the Triwizard Tournament with the Hunger Games and the Fighting Pits of Meereen.
That is Game of Thrones, right? The last one?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, all right. I'll have to ask you where in Game of Thrones, because I think I know, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be interesting. The most interesting thing, too, they're like, death has been a problem in the past, so we're going to try to limit that by upping the age. And, of course, Harry doesn't meet the age. And everybody, especially in this beginning chapter, is very suspicious of him, and did he enter his name or not?
Yeah, so it starts off with Harry's just sitting there and he's like, why are you all looking at me?
Right.
And he's just flabbergasted and Dumbledore finally tells him, you know, get your ass up here now.
Right. And even Dumbledore wasn't smiling. Like Dumbledore's reaction is usually pretty warm when it comes, especially when it comes to Harry. But everybody is like, what just happened? Like, and Harry's, I just can envision him being like, I didn't put my name in, like, stop. So all the teachers are very suspicious, especially the two, like, dueling schools teachers. They're, like, if there were you know, the opportunity for two champions to be entered, we would have brought more people.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So Harry goes into like that little offshoot and Fleur is like, do they want us back in there? Like, she thinks he's just Mr. Messenger Boy. And so, you know, everyone comes in and I'm conflicted by Fleur's response and how vocal she is compared to the two boys in the realization that Harry's a Hogwarts champion, because Victor Crumb doesn't say much and Cedric doesn't say much. It is all Fleur, at least on the student side, you know, all the professors are pissed, but right. But Fleur of the champions is the only one vocalizing her like discontent about this. And I don't know how I feel about it, because I don't know if it's coming from a place of like genuine frustration of this is unfair, or more like this little, the way she portrays herself, this little pipsqueak boys, like very patronizing.
Yeah, that her reaction is very interesting. I'm glad you pointed that out. It made me wonder, does she know Harry Potter is Harry Potter? Because she refers to him. I mean, I feel like if you knew who Harry Potter was, you would kind of be like, I mean, of course, freaking Harry Potter, here he is again. I know that Crumb was introduced to him, but I'm not sure. Well, I guess because they were pulled back, weren't they, before the Goblet of Fire popped his name out. So yes. She may not know who he was.
Yeah, not necessarily know who he is, but yeah, like, so as you said, Madame Maxime and Karkaroff are especially annoyed, and rightly so, because like Igor Maxime's like, there's nowhere in the rules that says that the host school gets to have two champions, what the hell?
Right.
And Dumbledore's like, Harry, did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire? He asked calmly. And this is such a funny quote, because I know you've seen maybe snippets of the movie Goblet of Fire. So the huge thing that they changed in the movie is they make Dumbledore very angry in this scene. And like grabbing Harry and like in total opposite of how Dumbledore responds in this scene.
Yeah.
And so everyone makes fun of the fact that, Harry, did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire the way they do it in the movie?
Oh my god, I wouldn't know what to, like, that reaction, he is, to piss off Dumbledore to that level, I don't know what it takes. I feel like they all know the weight, and right now it's just a little jealousy in part of it, but I think Dumbledore is thinking, God bless Mad-Eye Moody here in a minute, who is like, there might be some stronger implications to this than just like, oh, we want to have two wizards compete. I don't think Dumbledore is that, I don't know what the word is, but he's not like willing to cheat in that
regard. Like, he's not that competitive.
No, he's just like, whatever, y'all have your games and let's hope nobody dies. But yeah. What I think was the most interesting thing out of Dumbledore's mouth, not out of anger, unlike the movie, which I haven't seen that scene, but I'm sure it'll be shocking. But Madame Maxime accuses him of making a mistake, and his reaction is, it is possible, of course. And I was like, God, that's why I love you, Dumbledore. So there's a lack of ego in that response.
I think, and also I think it's false lack of ego in some ways, because I feel like in this position, Dumbledore knows that he needs to, like, for the sake of, because this is a political event with international schools, I feel like even though he knows damn well he didn't make a mistake, he has to at least say it, and he needs someone else, like Professor McGonagall, to say, Dumbledore, you know damn well you did not make a mistake, and that no one would have been able to pass your age line.
I think that, and you know, I think it shows some confidence in his part. He's like, fine, I'll indulge your assumption that I could have made a mistake. I know I didn't. You know, everybody at Hogwarts knows I didn't, but whatever, think what you want. And, yeah. You know, like you said, it does take, Dumbledore's not going to sit there and argue with her. So good thing McGonagall kind of was like,
yeah. And, you know, and thus, did you ask an older student to put it in the Goblet of Fire for you? And Harry's like, no.
Yeah. I mean, the duality of people's perception of Harry Potter is very interesting here. So if anything, I feel like he's kind of tried to state out. I mean, yes, they've been up to some kind of crazy antics and saved people, but I don't really think it was because, like, he's in it for the glory. Now, I guess the only thing that kind of contradicts that is the glory on the Quidditch field and his playing Quidditch. There's a competitiveness to him.
Yeah.
That is there.
And so Igor Karkaroff, again, logically, rightly so, is saying, like, we should submit more names so that each school has two champions now. That's only fair. Right. But Bagman's like, that's not how the Goblet of Fire works. It's, you know, been extinguished. It won't ignite again until the next Triwizard Tournament. So there's no way to choose other champions. But, you know, there is the argument you can make of you maybe you can decide to have two other champions and not use the Goblet of Fire. You know, but the problem with that is excuse me. But the problem with not using the Goblet of Fire to use two more champions is that they aren't bound in the same magical way that the other four champions are. So would that be fair?
Right. And would the Goblet of Fire... I kind of assumed the Goblet of Fire wouldn't spit any names out. It would just be like, these are my four. Get over it. You know? I don't know. I had a lot of questions about the reverence to this enchanted object, and then also, you know, I need, like, the handbook to read to know more about the Goblet of Fire.
Mm-hmm. And let's see what else. Yeah, and Moody's like, or was it? Convenient, said Karkaroff. I'm afraid I don't understand you, Moody. Harry could tell he was trying to sound disdainful, as though what Moody was saying was barely worth his notice, but his hands had given him away. They had balled themselves into fists. Don't you, said Moody quietly. It's very simple, Karkaroff. Someone put Potter's name in that goblet knowing he'd have to compete if it came out.
Mad-Eye Moody, come in with the like, thought-throughness, or and come in with the logic Mike, and...
Yeah. Mic drop.
Mic drop, yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, maybe he's right.
Yeah. And...
I mean... Well, and he says, you know, everybody's complaining, and he says, if anybody's got reason to complain, it's Potter. But funny thing, I didn't hear him saying a word, and if I may, it reminded me of mask mandates and children not complaining, but their parents kind of flipping out. So, like, this was kind of this instance that Harry's sitting there and going, like, I mean... I didn't put my name in, but here we go. And everybody else is freaking out around him.
And I guess just the nature, especially in the context of this competition, has been very deadly in the past. And only very recently has it been scaled back. It's in that context, it's especially surprising that they immediately go to this is intentional cheating rather than maybe this kid is in danger.
Right. And that's, it takes Moody to kind of come to that, to kind of help everybody realize maybe somebody's hoping Potter's going to die.
Yeah. And it's funny how Snape comes to the defense of Dumbledore by shitting on Harry. That is like, do not blame Dumbledore for Potter's rule breaking. He's been crossing lines ever since he set foot here. And again, Snape giving Harry way too much credit. Okay, Harry versus a 1,000-year-old Goblet of Fire.
Right. Like, how old is he at this time? 13 or 14? I don't
He's
remember.
He's 14.
Okay. Come on, man. Like, Snape. Always a problem. Always one I'm not willing. Always a question for me.
Yeah. Well, it just shows how emotionally driven his hatred of Harry is, because you can't have it both ways. You can't think that this kid is mediocre and yet think he's smart enough to pull off something like this, even if it is disruptive.
Right. Yeah. If anything, he would be like, it's genius level wizardry at this point.
And I think there's, you know, we have Madame Maxime and Igor Karkaroff, like, kind of, you know, first voicing their, you know, oh, it's the kid's fault. Like, he, you know, bam, he tricked the goblet, or he tricked Dumbledore's age line. He did something. But I wonder if, you know, maybe secretly they're also thinking that Dumbledore is so powerful, even if they won't admit that, they're thinking Dumbledore is the only one powerful enough to change the nature of the Goblet of Fire.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a confusing, you know, situation, because I guess they could be attacking Dumbledore's character. Instead, they're going after like a 14-year-old. But, you know, good on Dumbledore to kind of finally just be like, you know, how this situation arose, we don't know. It seems to me we have no choice but to accept it. Both Cedric and Harry have been chosen to compete in the tournament. That's how we have to move forward.
Yeah, and Madame Maxime is like, but Dumbledore, and Dumbledore's like, if you have an alternative, I would be delighted to hear it. So I just love that, because I hate people who like shit on something, and I'm just like, you got something better? Like, don't, you know, be hating on something unless you are prepared to put forth an alternative.
Right, exactly. How often does that stunt somebody? Like, if you are going to say, here's a solution, then great. But if you just want to, like, I mean, I've had to ask people in kind of a professional setting, like, are you just complaining, or do you just, like, are you trying to fix a problem? And a lot of times it's like, I'm just complaining. It's like, okay, then let's move on from there.
And... yeah, I think I'm just really surprised that there's no, even with Moody, like, putting forth the theory that someone put Harry's name in, like, with malicious intentions, I'm surprised that neither Bagman nor Crouch say, like, we need to take the goblet back to the ministry, we need to have specialists examine the goblet, we need to do this and that. There's nothing of that. They just accept it.
If anything, enthusiastically so. I think
Bagman, if any part.
Yeah,
Bagman at least.
Yes, yeah. And sorry, Bagman and Crouch, they're like together and I get them confused. But which makes me think I guess this is the thing that I'm not going to figure out until the end. It all seems like we're letting this all happen, and, you know, I'm not sure the reason yet, but it's kind of like this train is going to keep going no matter what, and we know where it's gonna, like, because it's gonna intentionally do this. So I feel like there are a lot of conversations being had that I am not privy to right now.
Yeah, and then Moody finally drops that maybe someone's hoping Harry Potter is going to die for it.
I don't think he's wrong.
So that, I don't know, anything more you observed or wanted to take note of in this initial shock conversation, fight, debate?
It's a lot of adults having a lot of conversations that I feel like it's very political. There are things going on behind closed doors that we don't know about. Harry and the competitors definitely don't know about, but definitely some folks in the room kind of know what's going on behind the scenes. But again, like, the reverence to the Goblet of Fire and kind of not saying maybe this thing screwed up, it made me think of the Sorting Hat and how everybody's just kind of like accepts it with its decision, kind of unquestioningly.
So I'm just trying to think, is there anything else in this conversation?
The end of it, Dumbledore is trying to ask people to go have a drink with him, and everybody's like, I'm good.
The one last thing I was just going to make note of, it just, the notion of, again, whether E. Karkaroff and Madame Maxime truly think Harry could have bamboozled this, or are externalizing all their frustrations onto Harry because they can't politically directly accuse Dumbledore of doing anything. You know, that makes me think of, like, you know, Dumbledore, at least in the United Kingdom, and for a good portion of the world, you know, or it's implied that Dumbledore is, like, all, like, so benevolent and so good. Again, basically kind of indirectly ended World War II in 1945. Yeah. So, according to his chocolate frog card, So Dumbledore has his reputation, but it's not helping, you know, there's still too much politics that immediately Karkaroff and Maxime are going for, well, of course he's going to cheat.
Yeah, it's very strange. And, you know, kind of like Harry and Dumbledore's character is called into question. I also think that, you know, with Harry, they're not as familiar with Harry as Dumbledore is, because he's not at their school. But it is all very strange interaction, and it definitely, I think, sours the beginning of this event that's supposed to be kind of a celebration and bringing people together. I mean, competitively, but you know, when they all kind of part ways, and like a Dumbledore is just trying to say like, let's have a drink, and people are like, yeah, no thanks, you know, kind of, he's trying to smooth things over, I think, and people aren't really in the mood.
I don't know if it's ever directly stated in the books or not, but I was the whole reimagining the Triwizard Tournament and bringing it back. Was that originally Dumbledore's idea? So I think it's just the, what is the dynamic? If it was Dumbledore himself who like instigated these talks and this organization, and then something like this happens, and so they like, maybe does that put more suspicion on Dumbledore, if, you know, or if, you know, maybe it would be less so if it, you know, was something the ministry decided and Dumbledore's just like, yeah, sure. But I, in my head canon, I always presumed that Dumbledore was the one who wanted this as a form of international collaboration, you know.
Well, especially with all the turmoil and craziness that happened at the Quidditch World Cup, I guess it's kind of a way to, I don't know, smooth things. I guess, you know, if it probably was intended to happen, but to give a distraction. But I think everybody's nerves must be on edge with the whole Dark Mark sighting. You know, there's a little bit of that and a little bit of distrust that happened. And I think it's just a good thing to remember that that happened, and we're still like moving forward, but it is in the back of everybody's mind. And how many chapters did we spend talking about like all the goings on at the ministry and the turmoil there? So I don't know.
So finally, Dumbledore excuses Harry and Cedric. And so they're walking out, and Cedric's like, how'd you do it? And Harry's like, I didn't do it.
And poor Harry.
And Cedric doesn't believe him, which I was, what was that, a dog outside?
Yeah, I have no idea where that is, but that's crazy that you could hear that. I don't know where he's at.
Yeah, the werewolves are coming.
Yeah.
For Halloween. So, which I don't know if that appears wholly in character, or maybe Harry the writer was externalizing his own frustrations that no one in the other room was believing him. Yeah, because Cedric, as you know, he's a very fair person and was willing to, like, redo the Quidditch match when Harry fell because of the Dementors. So, not that he knows Harry, you know, substantially well, but I don't know. It just seemed kind of weird that Cedric was, like, just kind of mad. Because, again, people are giving Harry way too much credit.
Right, and, you know, Cedric defended Harry's character in front of his father, too. So there's
I'm worried about the dog.
I'm sorry. I'm just keep trying to listen and make sure. I'm guessing somebody's on a walk and they're walking away.
So. No, the only thing I can think of is that because of Harry's nature of surviving a curse that typically no one can survive, I wonder if there's this underlying assumption from a lot of people, both adults and maybe even the kids, that he must be really, 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 really powerful, even if he is not fully aware of it or in tune with it yet. So I think there is that presumption that maybe, okay, he's the kid that survived the worst dark wizard of the 20th century. He has enough power to, you know, not that he knows what the hell he's doing with it, but he could undo the Goblet of Fire.
I'm so glad you said that before I got distracted by the wherever that werewolf was at. That was something that I thought about. You know, Harry Potter has been like, you know, wizard Jesus, basically, for all these people. So, of course, they're probably going to think, like, eh, sure, Harry Potter didn't enter his name. Like, you are powerful enough to get past this magic. And this is just evidence of that, which some people obviously are celebrating. Some people don't believe him. And some people are very upset.
Harry's left to meander back to Gryffindor Tower, and he's just thinking, like, you know, all my fantasies of entering and winning the Triwizard Tournament, they were all just, like, stupid delusions of grandeur. I never was gonna do it.
Maybe he manifested that. I don't know. I don't think he spoke it into being, but we've all had things that we've, like, fantasized about, but don't really want to have come true, so.
Yeah, and, you know, I partially blame Fred and George for promoting the idea that these kids can beat Dumbledore.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, well, they tried.
So. Yeah, like, they tried and failed, but just this, but they were so, like, stupidly and naively steadfast in their convictions that they could do it, you know, and thinking right. that, oh, well, we couldn't do it, but Harry could. And it's just like, you cannot beat out Albus Percival Brian Dumbledore.
Harry gets back into the Gryffindor common room, they're like, I can't believe you didn't grow a beard. Like, how'd you pull that off? You know, they're so stunned by that. And he's like, I didn't do it. You know, I just can imagine him, his frustration continuing to grow. Of course, Gryffindor is absolutely psyched that, you know, they're like, mm-hmm. we have a champion entering the tournament. So.
So Harry finally escapes and goes up to the dormitory tower. What were your feelings regarding, were you surprised by Ron's reaction?
I feel like this has been building for a while. And again, with my little bits of knowledge from Harry Potter, I knew that they kind of had a falling out a little bit, but I didn't know when or what it happened, when or how it happened. So I wasn't super surprised. I think this is just, that was just the final straw for Ron. He's been pushed aside, and then here's this last thing. So don't know if I expected him to be so kind of distrusting of Harry, but I guess I'm sure that's jealousy talking too.
Yeah, and I guess it's the context of people are glorifying the Triwizard Tournament in a way with totally negating its dangerous components.
Yes. Yeah.
So thinking that the only possible, like, response to, oh, my name's got put in the Goblet of Fire, that's automatically a good thing.
Yeah, it's like the assumption is if you're entered, it's going to be like Katniss in the Hunger Games. Like, so what? You have to kill a bunch of kids and put your life at risk, but you're going to have a house and, you know, be the darling of the capital. That's guaranteed. It's almost like everybody's just kind of, well, Ron, I shouldn't say everybody, is kind of assuming, like, he's going to get prize money. And
but it's like Ron is, you know, to do some crossovers, Ron isn't a citizen of the capital who's just watching this for entertainment. Ron is on the same level of Harry being partaking in a good portion of his adventures, going around with spiders, knowing that Harry doesn't want to do that for shits and giggles.
Right. I guess it would be like if Haymitch, that was kind of her coach, but I was trying to think of the makeup guy would be. Like,
oh, yeah, I forget his name. That was so
sad. Lenny Kravitz.
I was so sad when he died.
I was too. That one was hard.
Yeah. So Ron is, yeah, okay, said Ron, in exactly the same skeptical tone as Cedric, only you said this morning you'd have done it last night and no one would have seen you. I'm not stupid, you know. You're doing a really good impression of it, Harry snapped. Yeah, said Ron, and there was no trace of a grin, forced or otherwise, on his face now. You want to get to bed, Harry. I expect you'll need to be up early for a photo call or something. Yeah, so it's totally, you know. Again, you know, I think it just shows the level of jealousy that Ron has, because, again, intellectually he knows that, you know, and Harry and Ron were mocking Gilderoy Lockhart together, so. Right. He knows Harry isn't like that.
Right. Yeah. It's, I mean, and I don't know, maybe it's Ron's hormones too. Maybe that's all coming into play and he's just, it's all too much.
Yeah. And thus ends that chapter with the Golden Trio fractured.
Fractured, devastation at this point. I mean, it does suck. I think that everybody has had a situation where somebody's upset with them. Maybe I'm just revealing too much of my childhood trauma, where somebody's upset with them and you don't really know why.
And, yeah, it's, I guess it's just interesting because, you know, in a variety of contexts when it came to jealousy, even as a kid, I had the intellect to realize that this person may be getting what I want, but this person isn't being a bitch or a dick about it, you know? Yeah. And so it's just interesting because even at a very young age, I would never be like Ron in this way. Not saying I don't have other flaws, you know, or foibles and things like that, but this just specifically for me is not one of them. And it's, so it's very difficult for me to relate to.
I think that, and I appreciate that about you, because you do have that emotional intelligence that so many people don't have in that regard, like knowing that I have encountered people that do not know those things, and I probably have been guilty of it myself a little bit, but that's a deep-seated thing that I have worked through. And, you know, looking at it now, kind of going like, come on, Ron, like be on your friend's side. You know, this is a weird situation for him. But, you know, whatever, we're learning a lesson about jealousy, and that's great. That's good.
Yeah. And let's be frank, if this thing with the Goblet of Fire didn't have happened, this would have blown up in some capacity within the next year or two, probably.
Absolutely. It has been building and building. So.
Alrighty. And thus we move on to chapter 18, The Weighing of the Wands, which follows Harry the next day. And Hermione is smart enough to give him a piece of toast and like, let's not eat breakfast in the Great Hall. Let's go out into the lake and talk.
Good on Hermione. I appreciate it. This is where you and your Hermione-ness, like this is an Amy Hermione moment. Cause you're like, so I was like, this is some good perception of situations, you know, at 14 that I didn't have, but I was like, this reminds me of Amy. So good. It's a very admirable moment, and she's very like in tune with what's going on and kind of both where both of her friends are coming from. Now, I've also been the person in the middle of these situations, and that's pretty awkward, but
yeah. I find it interesting in terms of, you know, it's natural Hermione's emotional intelligence is higher because, you know, there's lots of brain studies that have been done. Well, it's both neurological and societal that society forces women to grow up because we expect more responsibility because we don't have girls will be girls, like boys will be boys. So, you know, for a variety of reasons, you know, girls tend to grow up faster than boys. But I think specifically for her, like going back to book three, just a year ago, she was so triggered by her disdain of divination that she was not showing very great emotional intelligence and empathy when it came to like Lavender Brown and her bunny dying and how that related to Trelawney's prediction. So I'm just always surprised that we went from book three in that regard to like, you know, eight, you know, to Hermione now. And this is, you know, the level of emotional intelligence that she will maintain throughout the series, which significantly higher than the boys.
She must have read like some books over the summer about emotional intelligence or something, because that's a good point. And I kind of wondered if it was just like the knowing people in my life who like just like it, sometimes so things are so illogical or in their mind or it's just so out there. That it's like, you cannot see this thing. And I think this thing, and it's just like so irrational. So some of that with the divination, I thought maybe Hermione too is just, you know, she was not very kind to Lavender Brown with her bunny, but she was just like, because you just don't get it. Like, this is not a real thing. And it's just like, you don't have to be right. you know. So it's good to see her evolve to this point where she's looking at both sides, and yeah. Good
yeah, for her. And so Hermione basically is like, it's always you who gets all the attention, you know? I know it's not your fault. I know you don't ask for it, but, well, you know, Ron's got all those brothers to compete against at home, and you're his best friend, and you're really famous. He's always shunted to one side whenever people see you, and he puts up with it, and he never mentions it. But I suppose this is just one time too many. So that just makes me wonder what specific instances between book one and now that maybe Hermione has taken notice of Ron reacting in certain ways, you know, in regards to Harry, and knowing he's not saying anything about it. So
yeah, I think the Quidditch playing, because Ron doesn't play Quidditch, right? He's no. on the sidelines, and just the money, and I think those little, what did I hear? A friend of mine had called it like little cuts. Like these little things that just slowly build, and then eventually you're just bleeding out completely. So I could see the little cuts that had been happening.
Yeah, but I suppose this is just one time too many. Great, said Harry bitterly. Really great. Tell him for me, I'll swap anytime he wants. Tell him for me, he's welcome to it. People gawping at my forehead everywhere I go.
Which, all right.
Yeah, it's one thing. You know, Ron's feeling unnatural again. It's really unrelatable to me, because even if it was something that someone had, like, gotten supposedly based on merit, or maybe not so much, but the fact that Harry is famous for this very dark, tragic thing, right. And Ron is still can't, like, work through it in his brain.
Yeah, Ron seems to have only seen the, like, I mean, he's gone through some, you know, challenges and things with him as far as navigating different, I don't know, challenges is a funny word, but because I'm thinking about like the chess game and stuff like that. But he hasn't, you know, he grew up in a very loving family. He doesn't know what it's like to live with the Dursleys, you know, and all the negative things that come with this. I think Harry was being a little extra in his reaction. It was a little much, but, you know, he's kind of doing the poor, pitiful me thing. And I was like, Harry, pump the brakes.
I kind of had the opposite reaction in regards to Harry. Like, I'm all for Harry having this reaction, because again, Ron knows that even if he doesn't like, he gets a little jealous of the, you know, attention Harry receives. He had to pull bars off of Harry's window in a flying car to help him escape. He knows what Harry has dealt with for the first 10 years of his life and what he goes back to every summer.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I guess maybe lived experience. You know, he can be on the outside, but, you know, being there and having that experience, knowledge of the experience versus living it. I don't know. Honestly, Harry kind of has these moments where he has his, like, it was strange. And I know that I think the tensions are high in this moment with Ron and Harry.
Yeah, because, you know, because Harry's just like, my name got put in this magical artifact, and, you know, not even, the time he compares this to is when everyone thought he opened the Chamber of Secrets, and he can considers this to be worse because he doesn't have Ron anymore.
Yeah, and this is on another level, because there is a bit of jealousy, and because there's such fanfare around this and joy, and like where the Chamber of Secrets, it was all scary darkness. In this, it's like, we get to do this thing and it's going to be fun. Sure, there might be a scary element, but people are excited and he gets to kind of reap that benefit. I don't know. I don't like when the Golden Trio is having issues right now. I don't like it.
And Hermione makes the very astute suggestion of writing to Sirius, because Sirius is gonna, I love Harry's response, like, if he finds out when he finds out I'm in the Triwizard Tournament, he's gonna burst through the doors.
This was another moment of intelligence that Hermione showed, and that reminded me of you. And also I was like, I'm glad somebody's there to help Harry like navigate this situation.
I've had situations where I get frustrated with certain people with when they didn't tell me something, and I end up finding about it in another way, and I'm just like, I don't care about it, I just don't like finding out this way.
Yeah, you know, that's so funny. That's because as a person that I'm probably like don't say a lot, sometimes my thought, I think I come from that place of like, well, I don't want to bother anybody with this. And then people get hurt. And I learned that lesson earlier this year. So now I tell people things.
Mm-hmm. So he writes a letter to Sirius and has to use a school owl at Sirius's suggestion because Hedwig is too noticeable, and Hedwig is really bitchy about it.
I wish we could talk to Hedwig and tell her what was going on, but she just gets pissed.
Yep, and Harry's like, first Ron, then you. This isn't my fault.
Oh my gosh. Poor Harry.
Yeah, and so going forward throughout the week, you know, just the sort of school ethos surrounding his new status as champion is not good. The Hufflepuffs are mad at him because they see him as trying to steal their champion's glory. The Slytherins, of course, were always going to be nasty to him, regardless of whatever. But he was thinking, okay, maybe the Ravenclaws will be a little smarter about this, but even the Ravenclaws are just like, oh, he's famous Harry Potter again.
That's this at this point it's kind of a drag because we know the truth, you know, but on the outside I know that I just know how kids can be, and I think this is an example of how kids can be, and I expected more of the Hufflepuffs, just saying.
Yeah, me too. And so we get to Care of Magical Creatures. And Hagrid, like, beckons Harry over, and he's like, you don't know who put your name in the goblet, do you? And Harry's like, you believe me? And that was just very sweet. And again, I am a Potterhead that holds Hagrid accountable to a lot of the shit that he subjects the Golden Trio, who are still minors, you know, what he makes them go through to cover his ass. But he earned a few extra points for the fact that he just accepts, you know, Harry's innocence in this matter unquestioningly.
I appreciated that somebody, and I was grateful it was Hagrid. It made me wonder how this plays out in the movie, but I, you know, in the book, he's just like, yeah, I mean, of course, like, you wouldn't do that anyway, you know, and yeah. He just kind of, which Harry is probably like, oh my God, thank God, somebody.
So in the movie, there's a scene in Dumbledore's office, like with the professors, you know, discussing this that obviously is not in the books. But I really appreciate it because in the scene, McGonagall is like, you know, do not let Potter compete. Like, you know, again, there's different technicalities in terms of what the magical contract is, like how they do it in the movie. But it's just the idea of what I was saying, like back in, you know, very first episode in book one, that, you know, McGonagall has this sort of maternal instinct to want to protect Harry. And in that scene, you know, in the scene, Snape is like, you know, headmaster, maybe we should let these events unfold. And McGonagall's like, use him as bait. Potter is a boy, not a piece of meat.
Good for her. Good for her. I'm sorry. These dogs are out of control and I don't know where they come. Hopefully you didn't hear them.
I did not, actually.
Okay. Sorry. Because that's all I could hear now is shaking my head. Like, I cannot believe them. I don't know what they're doing. They must be feeling frisky.
Yeah, So I liked that. For all, you know, a lot of people shit on the Goblet of Fire movie for very, very good reasons. But I do appreciate that maternal element being added in McGonagall's character, and which I think has a basis in the book. It manifests itself in a different scene.
Yeah, I could see how she could be easily, I could see how they could extract that and just, you know, have her be kind of stoic and whatever. But that's good that somebody's there to like think about him in a maternal way.
Mm-hmm. And then eventually we're about to go to potions, and there is a bit of a standoff between Draco and Harry in front of potions. And Harry's just like really, really fed up. You know, it's not even about the buttons because he knew the Slytherins were always going to be like crappy no matter what. Right. I think it's specifically, you know, calling Hermione a mudblood again.
Yeah, that's definitely a trigger for both Harry and Ron. And you know, they, of course, they're shooting their curses. I don't know how to say that.
Yeah, correctly, their curses.
At each other, which then it lands on each of their friends. Unfortunately for Harry, it's like his one friend who's on his side right now. And poor Hermione.
And Snape comes gliding over. And so he tells Goyle to go to the hospital wing. And Snape looks at what's been done to Hermione. And what does he say?
I see no difference. What a dick. Like, this, I'm sure she's so self-conscious.
Anyway. This is one of the top worst things that... I think this is the thing I hate most about Snape, at least as a teacher. You know, again, he does plenty of stuff outside of his realm of being a teacher that are horrible. But this is his absolute worst moment to me as a teacher.
As a 14-year-old, as a very awkward 14-year-old, like, you're not self-conscious enough, and he's, like, calling her out for her... I didn't realize she had prominent front teeth.
Another reason why I was compared to Hermione.
Oh, I didn't... It's you're very blurry, and I've still never met Amy in real life, so I have no idea. But I used to have gap teeth, so I had two big front teeth. They're pushed together. Anyway... Poor Hermione. I hated this, and yeah. I hated Snape for this too. He's a jerk.
Yeah, because you know the whole thing. Because it kind of transcends that. Okay, clearly it isn't just Snape has this one like beef with one student, Harry, because of his very personal past with his father. No, he is a dick to absolutely everyone except his little sycophantic Slytherins.
Yeah, which is just. It's very gross, and it's just gross. Like, I can't imagine. I was trying to think about, you know, being in school, and if I ever had... He's essentially bullying these kids, and it's like, well, I don't remember that situation. I remember a teacher being a dick to everybody, but not necessarily, like, personal attacks, so...
Yeah, and but the unfortunate reality is, you know, in K through 12, like, Snape is a caricature, but there are teachers like Snape... who exist, and for whatever reason they have not been fired yet.
That is too bad, because that I think the worst thing that I can think of off the top of my head a teacher said to me is girls aren't good at science, so because I wanted to get into science, and I was one of those people that it stuck with me. I think I've mentioned that before, but yeah, this is not okay. Snape, and if you were a teacher like Snape, then like quit your job, please.
Yeah, I got the most angry at a teacher. He didn't like say anything rude. It was in college, actually, a professor where it was sophomore year, and I was diagnosed with mononucleosis. I was just diagnosed, and you know, just obviously feeling really bad. And I went to him, you know, with my paper showing that the doctor had just diagnosed me, and I'm like, hey, I just got this diagnosis and I'm feeling really crappy, can I please reschedule the exam? And he's like, no.
why? That's so silly.
His justification for it was that he already allowed for like one makeup test like per semester of like the three big tests there were, so he basically just expected me to use my like freebie for this, and it's just like, but that's not fair. Like, I have a very specific situation right. going on, and I didn't feel I should have, you know, had to waste my makeup or retake for a situation that wasn't a question of me not studying. You know, just I'm sick.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of beyond your control. Ugh. Much like Hermione's teeth. Like she can't help that her teeth look like that.
Yep. And so Snape ushers them all in and is hellbent on poisoning Harry, but then Colin Creevy comes to the rescue.
This makes no sense to me. Like, obviously Snape can't poison Harry unless he wants to go to Azkaban that bad. I mean, I'm assuming
Snape has the antidote. I think it was just to let Harry gurgle at the mouth and like writhe in pain for a little bit before administering the antidote.
Okay, so just like to do some humiliation and give his little Slytherins a little thrill. So, okay. That's gross.
Yep. And so he tries really hard, like, Potter, you better come back, you know, to test your antidote. And Colin's like, yes, take his stuff with him. And he's like, fine, just go. And so we've got the Weighing of the Wands. What'd you think about this?
I liked how, you know, of course, Ollivander comes to help with this. So I think there's a little bias that he has toward his own wand creation. But I liked kind of reading about the different wands in Beauxbatons and Durmstrang. Sorry, I said that wrong. I thought that was really interesting. It's one of those things that I didn't quite think about would be unique regionally, but it makes sense that it was.
Yeah, because, you know, and it's always nice to see Ollivander again, because we haven't seen him since book one.
Right.
But before technically we get to Weighing of Wands, we have, what'd you think of Reader Skeeter in the flesh?
Glad we got to meet her in the flesh. I thought her, what is this thing called?
The quick quotes quill.
Yes. First of all, that would be awesome to have, helping me write. But secondly, she's, based on what we knew about her and her writing, it kind of made sense that she was a little kind of over the top character. And the quick quotes quill embellishes her story a little bit, which, I don't know, she didn't surprise me too much. I'm sure she's modeled after a specific writer, but I don't know who that would be. I mean, just kind of a trashy tabloid in a way.
Yeah, and it's just, again, it's just kind of funny that she, like, the Daily Prophet is like the New York Times. Like, it's like it's like the serious, like, it's one thing if she's writing stuff for, like, you know, the tabloids, but the fact that, you know, that the like official newspaper is publishing her garbage.
Yeah, I mean, she takes a slant that is...
Like, the only way, you know, professionally is, again, is just her sensationalized brings the Daily Prophet money.
Yeah, I guess that's...
Which Harry, the writer, has suggested that, you know, play on words, the Daily Prophet, you know, not just prophet as in, like, Jesus or Muhammad the prophet, but prophet as in for profit.
Oh, interesting. Okay. It's clever.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we have this really weird, you know, interview, for lack of a better word, in a broom closet that Dumbledore interrupts. And he's like, oh, I especially enjoyed when you called me like a something dingbat.
Obsolete dingbat.
Yeah.
His retort is very Dumbledore. I'll be delighted to hear the reasoning behind your rudeness, Rita. I was like, good for you. Calling her out, but like not in a, you know, not being like, I cannot believe you wrote that to me, in a very Dumbledore-y way, I guess.
And the first thing he said was like, how do you like my article? And he's like, enchantingly nasty, which again, nasty has taken on this very feminist thing after Trump called Clinton nasty after the debate.
Oh, yeah, nasty woman.
Yes.
Interesting. I think it was in this scene how she hides her quick quotes quill really quickly, you know, when Dumbledore shows up. So it's kind of like she doesn't want people to see her little ghostwriter next to her.
Yeah. But then we get, you know, into the real Weighing of the Wands. Again, we get Ollivander, and again, this is our real exposure into, like, wand lore and how wands are made and how different wand makers have different styles, and this stuff will become very, very important later.
Well, and with that being said, with Fleur, you know, they talked about her being part, or talked about her looking like a Vila, and then she is part Vila, and there's a piece of hair in from her grandmother, which then that made me think like, oh, I didn't know they could, like, you know, have kids. I don't know. It's, again, another magical creature, you know, that's kind of my jam, is the gothic monsters and things like that. So I want to know more about them.
Yeah. So her grandmother was a full Vila, meaning she is a quarter Vila, just like I am a quarter Danish because my grandfather was a full-blooded Dane.
That's, I thought that was so interesting. And also the things they make that Mr. Ollivander makes the wands do, like for the different people. It's interesting.
And so, yeah, so I think it's kind of portrayed like in the beginning that, that wand making and how Ollivander does it is very, very standardized, and it's just mm-hmm. how it is. But then, again, our Harry's worldview of the magical world is very limited to the United Kingdom, and then we start to realize, oh, that different wand makers use different wand cores, they use different woods, they don't always agree with what is a good, you know, a good temperament for a wand and what isn't.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting. And, you know, the, I have to say that when they talked about Crumb's wand, I have no idea what Gregorovichin, is that how I say that?
Gregorovich.
Okay. Creation. I did not know. Like, I felt like I could see, Diggory's, I could see Harry's obviously, and I could see Flora's, but I could not see his in my mind's eye.
Yeah. And just saying that his wand is thicker, like, than usual. So that makes me think of, you know, just the whole diameter slightly. It makes me horrible not to accuse Victor Crumb of anything, but it makes me think of that law that used to be that a man can't beat his wife with a stick as long as he can, as long as the stick is not thicker than his thumb.
Right. Hence the rule of thumb, like why mm-hmm. people, they are. Yeah, that's weird, because I kind of thought of that as well. But I need to see this in the movie, I guess, because I'm like, I don't know what this looks like. So.
Mm-hmm. And just trying to think. Yeah, and Harry at first is like absolutely terrified that, oh, please do not tell everyone that my wand core is the same as Lord Voldemort's. Please, please, please don't. But luckily, Mr. Ollivander still has some discretion.
Yeah, yeah, that would have been, like, I think that would have put people over the edge. And with, especially with Rita Skeeter there, it would have been days of news for her. So.
Mm-hmm. Wand weighing ceremony ends. Harry goes back. Hermione's not still in the hospital wing getting her teeth fixed. And we have a small interaction with Ron, and he's just like, you have an owl.
Thanks, man. And then the reminder of the detention.
Well, I think I didn't think of it because, you know, as angry as Ron is right now, like, Ron was present in the conversation of you can't use Hedwig anymore because, you know. So I think Ron, in his anger, I think he realizes that the only reason Harry would be using a different owl is that it's a letter from Sirius. And so, and in a way, Ron was kind of like watching it to make sure that no one else saw it.
Oh, so there's a little crumb of care still there.
Like, there's a crumb of care, if not for Harry directly, then at the very least for Sirius.
Yes. Yeah. Well, good. I you know, it's just one of those, it's like, he might be pissed now, but you can tell that he's still like his. I mean, again, it's just jealousy. It's just very interesting. But we get the letter from Sirius, and
Basically, he's gonna try and talk to Harry face to face on the 22nd of November. That'll be fun.
That will be fun. Alone by the fire. So I think I know how he's going to appear to Harry.
Flu time.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
Alrighty then, and thus concludes chapter 18 with our letter from Sirius. Well, I love how many little stickies you have in your book.
Trying to be, instead of highlighting, I've started stickying. I heard that's the thing to do, so.
Yeah, I've just totally externalized my notes, whether it's in a little notebook or on, you know, online, because I listen to audiobooks, so it's not like I have the book and, you know, scribbling, so.
You are a much more well-versed in the book than me, and I gotta remember this, so.
Alrighty then, so shall we start with our exercise of Gothic Geek Out? So my Gothic Geek Out is kind of a bit of an abstract one, excuse me, and mine is Harry's compulsion to enter the Triwizard Tournament feels like the triggering event in a Gothic novel, because a lot of times in Gothic novels, a big triggering scene is someone dying, and there are legal implications to a person dying and leaving a certain inheritance, namely probably the haunted house that the person has to go to and all the shit happens.
Right, right. That's a good, so like the triggering event. I like
not that. Just a triggering event in terms of like it's not so much the protagonist is choosing to engage with what's happening or is wanting to. So if they're not legally so either they're legally bound to go, you know, deal with something because of the triggering event, then either way they're like still technically they could say no, but there would just be a lot of headache if they didn't do it.
Kind of like the Riley Sager novel that we read.
Home Before Dark.
Home Before Dark. I have the Lock Every Door right here, so that's all the cover I could see in my head.
I do love that the designer for his books.
Yeah, it's really, it's kind of like very neon, but like it's cool. I like it.
So that's kind of what I thought of in terms of just that compulsion of having to enter a dangerous place or dangerous territory and not really having a say in it.
You made me think of that Home Before Dark and her kind of having, well, she kind of elects to take care of that house, but the lack of consent in this thing that she has to do. I fumbled that a little bit. I don't know that I kind of had to go abstract with my gothic element this week too. And I kind of thought about family strife and jealousy in with Ron and Harry. And I thought about Jane Eyre. And I don't know if there was necessarily, you know, the family strife just seems to be a very relevant topic in a lot of gothic literature. And Jane Eyre, I think about the cousins being mean to her and jealous of her. I feel like there are better, I could come up with more examples in that. Anyway.
Because you're right in the sense because a lot of the family strife in the gothic novel contents is about money and inheritance. And Ron even brings it up all the glory, 1,000 galleon prize money, whoop-de-doo for you. So Ron is thinking about that. So,
yeah. And how, you know, of course, he's thinking like, because Harry doesn't have enough money, you know, my family could really use that. That would be great. And there are so many instances in Gothic literature where there is the Castle of Otranto, you know, different sort of familial strife related to money or somebody's marrying somebody. I am thinking of Wuthering Heights, just and all of that. The
Mystery of Udolpho, where literally the evil Italian count is blackmailing his wife, the protagonist's aunt, to like sign off to like give me all your property. But when she dies and it goes to the protagonist, Emily, he's like, you know, I'm gonna lock you in here until you sign the papers, you know, relinquishing your inheritance. And that also is an element to the book that I am reading, The Woman in White, where the husband is more or less was trying to get his wife to sign something but covering it, like not telling her what she was signing. And she's like, screw that. I ain't signing anything I don't know about.
Good for her.
But specifically the strife in terms of, you know, the tangible monetary gain, which is present in this particular issue with Ron and Harry.
Yeah. That's the best I could do this week.
No, but that's a good one.
Cool.
So let's see, where are my notes? So we can move on to Tarot of the Day. So let me just pull up. I forgot to pull the page out, but I was really proud of myself in terms of, you know, the fact that one of our chapters was Weighing of the Wands, because the card I pulled out was the Ace of Wands.
Whoa, that's trippy. I saw the wands and I was like, Tarot Wands, come on.
Yes, which, again, because we recently did the Ace of Swords, did we not?
I think so.
A few episodes back. But Ace of Wands. As an ace, this wand card brings you pure potential. This time in the spiritual, energetic realm, ideas are flowing to to you, motivating you and inspiring you to pursue a new path. You are open to receive new opportunities that align with your higher self. A whole world of possibilities available to you. The Ace of Wands encourages you to follow your heart and live your passion. If you feel a strong pull towards a new project or path, but are questioning whether it will work, then this card gives you a gentle nudge to pursue your passion. You can always start out small, treating the project or idea as an experiment or trial. Then if it feels good, keep doing it. And if it doesn't, make adjustments and try again. Let your energy, dedication, and motivation be your guides. So, yeah, like, again, Ace is all about the, like, the beginning, budding energy with any Ace. And the Wands, basically, they're kind of in the middle. Like, the Cups are very emotional, and the Swords are very intellectual and rational. Wands are intellectual and, like, more mental, but, you know, logical, but much more in the creative than pure, like, rigidly intellectual.
Okay, okay. It's really hard for me to think, because it sounds like that this card would be, what am I trying to say, like, something that you would elect to do, like, start a new project or something, moreover than something that is imposed on you. So the potential of the new path, I guess there's a new path of, you know, sadness in the Golden Trio's friendship, but I'm just having a hard time thinking about it. So much of this has been, like, just put on people in these two chapters rather than their, you know, I feel like a couple chapters ago I could have applied it to Hermione's spew efforts or something like that.
Yeah. Keep in mind, however, that the Aces represent potential but not guaranteed results. The Ace of Wands, or any Ace, is a seed that has yet to grow into something more substantial or sustainable. The opportunity on offer shows great promise, but it will be up to you to maximize it for the long term. See this card as the spark needed to fuel a massive fire, but remember that the flash itself is not enough to keep the flame burning. Which, I don't know, what I'm thinking about is, if I were in Harry's position, even if they were telling me, like, on the first night that I've got to compete, I would be fighting more in terms of, like, no, fuck this, I shouldn't have to do this.
Right, right.
And so the fact that Harry is just, you know, accepted it as, you know, well, I'm Harry Potter, I guess I have to. It's kind of, and not just that I'm Harry Potter, like, in the Wizarding World, the celebrity and all his adventures, but just the fact that he was with his aunt and uncle and just had to do things that he didn't want to do.
Right. That's a good point. He's kind of used to doing things that he's just like, well, I gotta do this. He doesn't want to rattle the adults. And I think that's a really interesting point, that I wonder, you know, if he, you know, we did see him push back on Aunt Petunia and Mr. Dursley, because I can never remember his name.
Vernon.
God, I don't know why. I just don't want to remember his name, I guess. But he respects kind of, like, all those adults in the room when that decision is presented to him. So he kind of is of the mindset Dumbledore is kind of like, well, this is the deal, so let's move forward. And it almost feels like Harry just kind of had that thought initially. Like, he makes a point of writing, you know, sure, I fantasized about it, but I never really thought it would be a reality. So I wonder if he was just hesitant to push on adults that he respected. He pushed on the Dursleys a little bit, but not, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, here's another detail. Even if you prefer to plan out everything before you begin go down a particular path. The Ace of Wands wants you to listen to your instincts and follow your gut. If it seems like a good idea, it probably is. So start with a few fundamentals to get things rolling. So I think in terms of following Harry's gut, like, Harry is, you know, ruminating in his mind, like, would someone put my name in the Goblet of Fire as, like, a treat, as a reward? And he's like, no, they would do it for, like, malicious intent. And so I think the Ace of Wands being the seed in terms of Harry trying, you know, beginning to set things up, the seed of, okay, here's the next mystery that I get to solve for this year.
Yeah. The next, it's always going to show up, probably, I'm going to guess.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
Not really. I mean, yeah. Ace of Wands.
Yep. And then I was also very proud of myself in terms of the card I drew for you know, from my Black Moon Astrology oracle cards, because guess what it was?
Oh my gosh, I don't know.
The fire element.
Goblet of fire. We got the fire. It's all fire and wands. It's beautiful.
Yeah, when the fire element card is involved, expect changes to be dramatic in an unforgettable way. A situation is about to be transformed through a wake-up call or a personal epiphany. Well, certainly that applies in Harry's name coming out of the Goblet of Fire, because, you know, the previous chapters, you know, 16 ended with his name being called, but it was only in the end of chapter 17 that we realized that there's no backing out of this.
Right.
The fire element can also denote honesty and suggest you act assertively. You are about to get up front with someone or vice versa. At least you should. And this card says to push it. In any event, you will soon understand where you stand as all of your cards will be put on the table. Then you can expect less mystery. So I think Harry is assertive in claiming his innocence of to the adults that I did not put my name in the Goblet of Fire. He's also asserting and being honest with Ron in I didn't put my name in the Goblet of Fire, but then just general the honesty and the cards being laid out, both by Harry's observation and Hermione's explanation that there has been this thing that's been between Harry and Ron, and clearly it's been bubbling up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And just on the journey he's about to embark on as a Triwizard tournament competitor, it's a whole new world. And then, of course, yeah, the fire just makes me think of Gryffindor, and we've talked about the elements and the houses and
yeah, all of that. Oh, another one. Watch out for bossy people. When this card comes up, it can indicate a type of bulldozing that will be hard to deal with, Reader Skeeter.
That's a good point. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. This card is for passion. Therefore, if romance is your question, this is a compelling attraction. No, it doesn't really. Yeah.
No,
not these chapters. Fire element card is one of new starts, often after the past has been burned away, and denotes a period where you start anew. Be honest in your approach. Any arrogance will be your enemy. Which, again, arrogance will be your enemy. Just the fact that everyone is becoming Harry's enemy because they accuse him of arrogance.
Right, which is one thing that he's never, I mean, I think that if he might have gone over into the Slytherin house, that might have been a different story. He may have kind of embraced some of that and been encouraged to embrace some of that by Malfoy. And
I'm just genuinely wondering how much of his status as a Quidditch player is playing into this celebrity, oh, he's so arrogant and always wants glory, because, you know, in this little school environment, Quidditch has a lot of social capital, and he's really, really good at it and gets a lot of recognition for it. I sometimes wonder, like, if it was just him being Harry Potter and, like, no Quidditch, would that help at all in terms of people? If he was just really quiet, like Hermione in the library, not doing a flashy sport, like, would that help at all? Certainly not with people like Snape or anything like that, because they're like beyond hope. But like about general student body and other people making certain presumptions about him.
I think you make an excellent point because of how Victor Krum is received. It's just like fawning all over him. Everybody's just, you know, and I guess even Cedric, we talk about how he's a very good looking person and he also plays Quidditch. So he's like, you know, there's that extra element that maybe if Harry were just bookish and, you know, not playing sports, then he may be perceived. I guess I'm trying to think about athletes. I mean, I did not play school sports, but thinking about how certain athletes are perceived, there is kind of a level of arrogance there, and it's also encouraged in sports. So I could see that if we pulled that away, that might be. This might not be a problem, as big of a problem for him.
As big. It would still be there to a certain extent, especially with people like Snape, but.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. But I digress. But yeah, overall, two very good applicable cards. Fire and wands.
Like getting those good cards pulled. I like it.
Yep. Alrighty then. And now we move on to our last exercise. Fan fiction time. So, what were your scenarios?
I could only really come up with one And I just thought it was the implications of this would be really interesting. And if, what if the Goblet of Fire selected Ron instead of Harry? So, like, what if Ron had this moment of glory, he thought, but again, with kind of the situation that Mad-Eye Moody poses, is somebody's out to get Harry and wants him to lose this. So what if it was a little bit more like, I'm not going to go after you directly. I'm going to go after somebody you love, you know, or somebody you're friends with. Ron would have felt good about it, but I could see the storyline going in a very dark direction where, you know.
Yeah, like, honestly, I envision a scenario where actually they would still have this fight because Ron would be so ecstatic that he's getting glory, not paying that much attention to Moody's point of this might be been maliciously intended.
Right.
And Harry and Hermione are going to be, would be on Moody's bandwagon of this is really bad. And then Ron getting really pissed off at both of them.
Yeah. Ron and Hermione.
For like trying to rain on his parade.
Yeah, kind of Harry and Hermione trying to bring him down to earth and like, you know, this is a bad thing. And you're exactly right. It would probably turn out the same way. And he would be like, you're just jealous of me, Harry. You don't get the glory for once. Like, kiss my ass, go away. You know, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I feel like that's how it would. I think so. The only question would be is certainly Hermione would not have it's not in her personality to like, contain herself like that, so certainly right. Hermione would voice that and Ron would get mad at her. I guess it would just depend on how much Harry was willing to also voice Hermione's, you know, concern, or whether not necessarily be cowardly but be a little more muted about his concerns just to keep an eye on Ron.
And you bring up a good point, because you know, in previous books, Ron and Harry have always kind of sided together, sometimes against Hermione, and even with her spew project, they're kind of like mocking her and, you know, whatever. So I think that Ron would feel that betrayal even more heavily if Harry's like, yeah, there's some weight. So him being caught in the middle would be really strange.
Yeah, well, it's in Ron and Hermione's dynamic. Harry's been in the middle multiple times already. Between Ron, yes, but it would just depend on how seriously Harry, you know, voiced his concerns about everything.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Either way, they would have had this fight, I think.
Yes, I agree. It would have happened. So.
Yeah, my thoughts were, what if Ron had believed him?
Okay. It's so funny that's your take, because after we were like, this would have played out. So what if it that like situation? I think part of me wants to say that this was bubbling anyway, but go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it definitely was bubbling. And I think if this didn't happen, like something else would have happened with Harry being a celebrity. Something would have caused this to spill over. But I think if Ron was a little more cognizant, again, of the, like, danger implication, especially in the context of being Harry Potter comes with a certain level of danger, and the whole ordeal they went through in the woods with the Dark Mark and everything else they've gone through before, you know, I guess I would have think that at least in the beginning, Ron would have been like, oh, like, you know, who could have done this? Voldemort's so far away. Where's Wormtail? You know, like, you know, thinking about all of these things. And then as the tournament progressed, like, and it, again, with these things like photos and like, you know, Harry getting lots of attention, then maybe would have,
right,
you know, just, you know, delayed it.
Yeah. Yeah. So at first,
like, he would have been on board. You know, again, I guess I just feel like it would be more relatable to me. Again, not saying that this is not true to Ron. What happened isn't true to Ron's character, but I think just the idea that it would be nice if Ron was smart enough to, even if he has this jealousy bubbling up, that he would at least have the capacity to understand that this has negative implications, and then maybe still blow up at Harry at some point, but still realize this is bad.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think it would have been delayed, like a delayed reaction. At first, they would have been on board, but then kind of maybe as they're progressing through the challenges, he would have been like, I don't really like this. Because I'm assuming Harry's going to win at least one or two of the challenges. So,
yeah, I would think like maybe after... maybe after doing really well in like the first or the like, second challenges, and we're getting to the end, and it's looking like Harry could win, and then, you know, the sort of danger because Harry won or like did well, then Ron getting really resentful and like the danger element getting less and less because Harry's been doing so well in the competition. So
right, yeah, I think. I would have liked that. I would have liked that because right now nobody is on Harry's side. So it would have been, you know, well, Hermione's and
Hagrid.
But that's kind of it.
And Dumbledore and McGonagall, but they're not buddies.
Yeah, and they kind of have to take a different kind of position in all of this. They can't be as buddy-buddy. So it would have been nice if he had like his two buddies there to help him out.
Yeah. Alrighty then, and thus concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time, and we will go over chapters 19 and 20, The Hungarian Horntail, and The First Task. Catch you guys later. Bye!
Bye!
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophia Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophia Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophiaMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophia Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophiaMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks.
That was the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.